Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, August 31st, 2020, and this is episode 205 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and joining me today in another new abode. I don't know what's going on with you, Eric. It's 2020 though, right? Right? It's 2020. Exactly. But Eric Nathanson joining us from a new location near Vegas. What's going on?
I'll say undisclosed location at this point because it looks like I'm recording from a bunker. There's a white wall behind me. I should hold up a newspaper so everybody knows I'm okay.
We all know it's witness protection. I get it. So
they move me a lot. So, you know, there's only so much I can do. I'm glad to finally be settled and, you know, get back on doing the pod on a regular basis because now I can watch the Giants again. And, you know, now I can actually analyze things that I'm watching instead of watching recaps and stuff like that. So it's good to get going. And the Giants had a decent week. And today's the trade deadline. Like, we've got baseball shooting out of our ears right now.
Yeah, we're thinking about postponing it till tomorrow, but it was like, oh yeah, trade deadline ends at 1, and we were going to record a little afternoon, but we had some technical problems, but we're starting pretty much at 1:05 p.m., so the trade deadline has passed. Nothing has hit the wire yet for the Giants, but something could come across the wire in the next 15, 20 minutes. Maybe they made a last-second deal, but we will definitely bring that to you if and when that happens during this podcast. However, the NL West has definitely gotten a little bit better, specifically talking about the San Diego Padres, who made a very large deal earlier today. They completed a trade with Cleveland to acquire right-hander Mike Clevinger. The deal includes 9 players, 6 of them from the Padres, a mix of prospects and big league contributors, sent to acquire, of course, Clevinger. So that gives them an automatic number one. They're already doing, obviously, extremely well this year. This could be the year for the Padres. I mean, I know we talked at the beginning of the year, and, you know, we've been talking about the Padres being good for the last 4 years, and it's just never materialized. But with the short season and them doing well the first 30 games, and now, you know, let me put it this way. In the past 48 hours, the Padres have now acquired 9 players and traded away 15. I mean, that includes prospects too that aren't on the ML roster, but still, I mean, now they've acquired a number one starter, and, you know, he's only going to have what, a maximum of 5 starts the rest of the way, 4 starts, right? Something like that. But that still could give him an extra 2 wins or something like that and make a big difference. I mean, as of right now, it looks like the Padres are going to be a lock for the postseason. Not necessarily in the number 2 slot, although that's where they're placed right now. But they're in a really good position to at least be in the tournament. So, and if they have someone like Clevinger pitching the first game of that 3-game series, that's a pretty good boost. So,
that begs a quick question. On the seeding for the playoffs, are the division winners getting the top 3 seeds, or are they just seeding them 1 through 8?
So the way I understand it is that they seed them 1 through 8, but that the top 2 do get the home field. So I don't know how that's going to be different. So what I mean by that is, like you said, I mean, you have 3 division winners, correct? So right. You have 1-2, 1-2, and 1-2. Well, you have 8 teams. So I think the wild cards by default have to go play number 1 and 2, of course.
Right.
3 and 4 are going to play 5 and 6. So the 5 and 6 division winners, but they're going to be on the road against 3 and 4. So that's where you get your straight seeding is for the actual road winners.
Okay, so they are doing that. Okay, because
I shouldn't say division right winners. Now, what I should have said is second place, right? So 6 and 7 most likely will be a second place. 5 and 6, sorry, should be a second place team, but they could go on the road. And that makes sense. It really does make sense. But that might give you a lot of intra-division first rounds, right? So you might have a 5 and 6, or, you know, 6 visiting a 5, and they're both in the NL Central. I mean, so it might, you know, that stuff might happen.
That's,
you know,
what as I'm of last if week. If the Giants eke in, they could be playing the Dodgers in the first round.
Exactly. So, like, that's if the number 8 seed right now most likely is going to play the Dodgers. And so, if the Giants slip the number 8, then they're going to LA for 3. And remember, that's the other advantage for the 1 through 5, I should have said 1 through 4, 1 through 4 okay. seeds, is that they get all three games at home. There is no 2-1. So they eliminated the wild card. So I think as a visitor in the 7th or 8th seed, you would rather have a one game for it, everything, instead of three games on the road. Yep. But you're also a 7 or 8 seed, and that's never happened before. So you're lucky to be in the playoffs.
Well, that's why I bring it up with the Padres, because if they get bumped down to a 4 seed because they'll be a second-place team, they'll still right. host the three games to start yeah. it off. And they should get that advantage because they have a better record than Atlanta, who leads their division. They're percentage points behind the Cubs, who lead their division. So it should shake out like that, because I'm not sure they're going to catch the Dodgers, but –
yeah,
San Diego Padres are absolutely going for it this year, and it's fun to see when a team, when the kid brother team goes for it, you know, because we, like you said, we talk about it. They got Machado, Tatis showed what he could do, you know, they made trades all over the place the last couple of years and never mm-hmm. came to something. So here they got another shot. We'll see if the Padres can actually make some noise, because I'm not sure that we know the Giants are not going to be the team to dethrone the Dodgers.
No, they're not going to be the team that throws the Dodgers. Hey, everybody. We're excited to announce that TortureCast has joined the Sports Hosts community as one of their official content creators. Sports Hosts is the world's first global community of fans, built by fans, for fans, kind of like our podcast. We're going to be working together with them to create better experiences, better content, and better events for passionate fans like you to be a part of. You can check out our page at the Sports Hosts platform by signing up for free. All you need to do is go to tinyurl.com/sportshosts. You can also visit sportshosts.com and search for TortureCast and ask to join our team community. Once you're in, you can even join your other favorite team communities and start sharing your passion with like-minded fans. This will be an experience like no other. Sports Hosts, let's go together. So, nothing's popped up as far as I can tell on the radar, on the tweeter, about the Giants yeah. making any trades. There's many other trades in MLB. We won't go over them because many of them don't affect the Giants. So let's go ahead and just start getting into the week that was in Giants baseball. So, of course, last week we had a very euphoric podcast because they had won 6 in a row. And they did start this week with their 7th win in a row. But overall, they went 3-3. They do sit in 4th place in the NL West at 17-19. And they are a half game back of the 8th seed in the playoffs. But there's like a cluster of like 5 teams vying for that 7th and 8th slot. So, but hey, you know, given the start of the season, the way it went, I think we're all very, very happy with the Giants where they are right now.
I mean, if after that road trip when they went 3-7, if you had told me that they were going to stay in the playoff hunt, I wouldn't have believed you. But the 7-game win streak capped off with this Dodgers. And what a great start of the week, that Dodgers-Giants game. That was a classic Dodgers-Giants game. It was the game of the season, I think, so far, because mm-hmm. the Giants never led in the game until they won. And it just kind of gave them that feeling that, yeah, we can hang with the big boys. We didn't just run through the Angels and the Diamondbacks. At least we can hang with the big boys. Granted, it changed as the week went on, but it was a good way to get started after we recorded, because it really, that great vibe kept going, you know?
Yeah, it was great. In fact, I had one of my friends at my CrossFit gym. He's a huge Dodger fan. I think I've talked about him before, but we both came to the workout the day after that game. And he just comes up and he's all, man, it doesn't matter how bad or good each team is. It's just that when they get together, it really shows that there is a rivalry every year, no matter what. And it is. It's true. The Giants and Dodgers have sometimes these epic games, you know, Red Sox, Yankees, Giants, Dodgers. It's just the way it is. And, you know, we'll get to some stats that I think are really important after that. But yeah, it was just really fun to talk about with him. And he's like, man, the Giants just kept coming back. They were just like annoying little flies. And they got some spunk this year. And I said, I know. I said, it didn't start out that way. But they really have been showing a lot of resilience, a lot of comeback victories, you know, extra innings lately. Their offense has been solid, it's been better than I ever thought it would be this year. Pitching has been a bit of a disappointment, but at least lately, the bullpen has actually really picked it up. So, you know, it was cool to get some props from a Dodgers fan when he knows that his team is the best in the majors right now.
And they are. They're head and shoulders above everybody else. That's why it was good to get one more. I saw, I was, the Giants, what did they go against the Dodgers this year then? 4-6?
So that's what I wanted to talk about. They went 4-6 against the best team in the majors. And at that time, after the end of this last series, the Dodgers are 18-5 against the rest of the league. So four out of the nine losses were against the Giants. You know, and now the Dodgers are 20-6 against the league and 6-4 against the Giants. So, I mean, you know, they held their own with them. And, you know, the series started really great. And we keep pounding on this, but they've completed all 10 games against the Dodgers that they were going to play this year. Think about that, Eric. They've played, at that time, they had played 31 games. And, sorry, 33 games. And 10 of them were against the Dodgers. Basically, a third of their season was against the best team in the majors. Who else could say that? And they were only two games under 500. So, you know, under 500. Not too bad. But that first game was an epic one. It's an instant classic. And the Giants individually came back four separate times, which apparently is the most in the modern era of baseball, or the second time that's ever happened. Now, granted, the extra runners in extra innings probably artificially inflated that. But the fact of the matter was the Giants were down four separate times. Of course, the biggest hit besides the end of the game happened here in the bottom of the ninth with nobody on. Kenley Jansen on their mound, their esteemed closer against Brandon Belt, who has been heating it up.
Belt, it's a high drive to center field. On the move is Bellinger, still on the move, out of here, and this game is tied. He's hot, folks.
He's hot, folks. He is hot. So Brandon Belt, who everybody's been kind of hard on for all these years, he's picking a good time to get hot because he's been single-handedly kind of carrying the Giants, and that tied it up, of course, at sixth in the bottom of the ninth. Now, the Dodgers end up scoring one in the 10th. The Giants come right back and score one in the 10th to tie it at 7. The Dodgers go up in the 11th and score another run. And that was such a weak run, Eric, the way they scored that one, where you had a runner on third, Justin Turner at the plate, Tyler Rogers up, completely crossed up Turner. He hit that thing off of his knuckles practically, this little squibber down the first base line, and Rogers wasn't the most athletic play in the world. Let's just put it that way. He gloved it, tripped, fell, and tried to extend his arm. Just missed Turner's ankles, and he was safe, and the run scored.
It was so funny because in real time, it's like, oh, he might get him. Oh, no, he didn't get him. Oh, yeah. And that's how they're going to lose this game. Like, that's a classic Giants loss. That is totally a classic way that I think the last 2 years they would have lost this game. But this team's different. And they showed it by scoring three runs in the bottom of the 11th. I mean, they didn't just score, you know, the one to eke to tie it up and send it. I mean, that whole game, Muncy homers in the first, Belt homers in the first. So they go up 3-0. Giants.
It was 3-0, then 3-3. I know. That was so. It was like right away. You're like, oh no, not one of these games.
Yeah, but it felt so good because you mentioned Belt, and we really got to give Belt some props. This is one of the hottest streaks he's ever been on, period.
Yeah,
he had two homers in that game, the first one in the first that I mentioned, the one you played in the ninth, and he was in the middle of everything. I think that was the day he got on base like five times. Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, at one point he had extended his getting on base safely to 11 consecutive plate appearances.
Right.
Think about that. That's in the major leagues, you get on 11 consecutive times via walk or hit. I mean, that's impressive, man. I don't care who you are.
Right. And I will, you know, totally take Belt to task when I think he's not doing well because he doesn't expand the zone. But obviously, when he's hot, he can carry a team. And if it wasn't for him, they never would have stayed in that game. They really wouldn't have. Yastrzemski went 0 for 6 from the leadoff position that day.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, they needed the middle of the order to step up. And at the end, Donnie Barrels came through. And there's another guy who's been struggling, Donovan Solano. So it was nice to see him get at least some vindication at the end of the night.
Here's Solano. Solano is 0-for-5, 2-1. High drive, left field. It is out of here, and we are going home.
I will always take the opportunity to play.
Solano sends everybody home.
Dwayne Kuiper home run calls.
Get the heroes welcome. And the Giants have won their seventh straight.
And that was amazing. I mean, seven straight wins. Everybody was high. they had the socially distance appropriate celebration at home. The Giants do it right, because I've seen some other ones and other teams are not taking it as seriously, I swear to God. They're but regardless, that was their seventh victory in a row. And of course, Longo, previous to Solano, had tied it up with a single. So it was great to see that. There was a runner on at the time when Solano hit it. And like Kipe said there at the beginning of that clip, he was 0-for-5 in the game, and Yaz was 0-for-6 in the game. So the top of the order was really struggling. So it took Belt and others, Longo, to pick him up most of the game. And then, of course, Donnie Barrels came into it at the end. All right. So I don't know how deeply you want to go into this, because this is a baseball podcast, not a social justice podcast. It's not a political podcast. Although I would argue that social justice has nothing to do with politics. That's my opinion.
Agreed.
But just prior to game two of the series, and by the way, I almost applied for this game, so it would have been really crappy to drive all the way up there and to have this happen, since I have a long drive.
But just prior to game two, it would have been fascinating to be there when it happened.
It would have been fascinating, but then I would have been walking away going, oh, that sucked. But just prior to game two, of the game against the Dodgers, they both agreed to boycott the game, and they kind of followed the Milwaukee Bucks' lead and the NBA's lead in boycotting the game that night. Because, of course, Jacob Blake is a black man who was shot 7 times in the back by a Wisconsin police officer in Kenosha. And since it was in the state of Wisconsin near Milwaukee, that's why the Bucks did this. And then it kind of infiltrated the NBA to LeBron James and Chris, what's his face, and a few others, and the NBA finally said, okay, let's just shut it down in support of that. And so the Dodgers did it. I believe the Reds did it with the Brewers. And then eventually over the last couple of days, we've even seen the Astros and A's and the Padres and the Mariners and a couple other teams do the same thing. But it was basically just a show in solidarity, a protest, a boycott to highlight the social injustice and racial injustice that is happening in this country. And again, Eric and I, laying our cards on the table, we are liberals, whatever. You want to put us in a corner or in a box for that, that's fine. We still want to bring you Giants baseball regardless of that. But I think this was a worthy cause. This is just a sport. It's baseball, people. And to me, it was really upsetting. Again, it was similar comments to the players kneeling, where it's like, shut up and hit, shut up and dribble. Like, this is not the place to do it. I can't call up work and boycott because I'm mad about this. It's like, well, right. If you did, first of all, yeah, you might get fired. Second of all, no one watches you. No one cares. That's the whole point. That's what this means. Because athletes are looked upon, because they are televised, because things that they do like this do make national news, that's why they do it. To highlight the social injustice. They're not doing it to be jerks or dicks to the owner. They are doing this because they know it will make waves in the news world, and it will get out there, and it will start conversation. It will start people to talk. If I do that at my work, I mean, no one cares. So I hate seeing examples like this. And again, it's only baseball. A lot of people were upset saying, oh, the owner should be mad at them. And it's like, the owner supported this across the board. There was no issue. Oh, they should take their money. Well, did you know that the Yankees and eventually Gabe Kapler and others donated 1 or 2 games of their salaries to the Players Alliance to help social injustice? So they didn't even need to take away their money. They donated to a good cause. So I just, from my point of view, anything that they did regarding this boycott was not a, quote, bad thing. It was a good thing. It generates discussion. It generates conversation. And it even generated some money that the players and coaches gave to social justice causes. So I don't want to go too much into it, but I definitely want to give you a chance to say anything about this, Eric.
Well, I mean, I supported the players. It's basically a strike, and they're not striking to get better wages. They're not striking against their own ownership. They're striking against us, the viewer, the fan. They're trying to make us feel uncomfortable and have these difficult conversations that need to be had in our country. And, you know, there are certain things that I don't understand because I'm a white man. And so there are certain injustices I have not faced. And so I can't understand what certain, other races and other people have gone through. I just can't, I can't grasp it, but I can be sympathetic towards it, not empathetic because I've never experienced, but I can be sympathetic towards it and understand that baseball is entertainment. That's what it is. These guys are entertainers, and that's why they followed basketball's lead. Hey, Joe Panic. That's why they followed basketball's lead, because basketball's been at the forefront of this. And the Bucks were the first team that didn't want to take the floor. And then the Magic were given the option of winning the game by forfeit. And the Orlando Magic said, we are not winning a basketball game that way.
Right.
And that's why they all decided that day. Because as Sean Doolittle said, or I think somebody else said it before him, but he's attributed to the quote, sports is like a reward for a functioning society. And we don't have a functioning society right now. Things are going haywire all over the place. And so to be uncomfortable for a few minutes and maybe have conversations, I'm okay with that. Yeah. I don't know how much change it's going to affect, but I do know NBA specifically is affecting some change. They're going to use some venues now as polling locations. And I know for a fact, you mentioned owners were behind them. The Milwaukee Bucks themselves went to their owner and said, this is what's going on. Can you help us get in touch with these people in government? And they formed a bill. And it was all based on the Bucks players and the Bucks owner coming forward. And that's my neck of the woods. I've been in Kenosha, Wisconsin, dozens of times. It was literally a 30-minute drive from where I grew up. Other stuff in Illinois happened, that was literally in my conference of high schools. That's where I grew up. So, like, I know Kenosha, and it was a little surprising because it's just a sleep little tourist town for people from Illinois. And so to see this happen, you know, these things aren't happening in Alabama and Mississippi. They're happening in Minnesota, in Wisconsin. You know, it's not like it's deep, you know, red state hatred type things. They're happening all over. So if the players want us to have that conversation and they want to take a pause, I'm 100% on board with it. And that's where I stand on it. I'm totally, totally good with that, with them boycotting. I'm totally good with the fact they had to play 2 7-inning games the next day. Yeah. Because as we are having the discussion right now, other people are also having the discussion, and that's really all they hope to accomplish. And I don't think it's going to be the last time. I wouldn't be shocked if this happens one more time during the baseball season.
Well, unfortunately, it's because things keep happening in this country, like you said, and that would be the reason that this happens again. And it's really sad. In fact, the NBA was on the precipice of canceling their entire season, but they came to an agreement and they resumed the playoffs this past weekend. But what did come out of that was something very productive, and it's basically they're going to open up as many stadiums that they can that are owned by the franchises to be voting centers. And I think that's fantastic. The ones that are too late to apply to be voting centers are going to be like ballot collection centers and, you know, support centers to help people vote and get them to safe places. Because as we know, there are political pressures going on right now, which are trying to make it hard for people in inner cities or people who don't have accessibility or people who are afraid to vote, to make it easier to vote. So,
yeah, and stadiums NBA's like that, infrastructure's in place in these cities to get people to the polling locations.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is really like the smart point of it, that the players are like, well, wait, you know, you've trains coming to this stadium every day. You can do it that day.
Yep.
So it's really a smart move.
I thought it was brilliant. So, but anyway, we'll stop the political stuff there. We didn't get too political. It was really just about, you know, baseball, but you know, the things are more important than sports, and it was just a day. And for those of you upset about it, that's your right. That's fine. I just would caution to you to think that, you know, in your lives, there are things that are more important than sports. So if you had someone who was harmed by something similar, or a friend that was harmed by something similar, or someone you cared about that was going through something like this, you wouldn't care about sports. And so it's okay that this happened for one day. And like Eric said, they made it up. And the next day, they went out and played two. Now, of course, under this pandemic, we have some weird rules this year, and one of them being if doubleheaders are scheduled, they're both 7-inning games. And this is how I played doubleheaders when I was playing amateur ball. They're both 7-inning games. Yep. So it was really interesting to see the major leaguers actually do this. Now, unfortunately, we won't go too much into detail because the Giants got swept in the doubleheader 7-0 and 2-0. So that 7-game winning streak came crashing to a halt. And I thought it was funny. There were a few Giants fans, more than a few Giants fans, on some of the social media sites that were saying, well, that's what you get for boycotting your game. See, that's what happens when you boycott the game. And I pointed out to several of them that it was actually the Dodgers who started the conversation about the boycott. It was the Giants who went along and agreed with it. The Dodgers didn't lose both games, and they're the ones who call for the boycott. So your logic is flawed there, Mr. I know that doesn't really mean a whole lot. I hate it when people do that. Oh, that's what you get for kneeling. Oh, that's what you get for doing that. And it's like, what are you talking? They're not even related. Like, stop.
The other team did the same thing. And, you know, it was kind of annoying, though, because we talked about how the Giants went 4-6 against the Dodgers. They were 4-4 heading into this doubleheader. They had a chance to at least split the season series, if not win the season series, and they just absolutely didn't show up. Yeah. And the Dodgers showed once again why they are the better team. And it was, you know what? Okay. You know, you can't argue with that. The Dodgers proved who they are, and the Giants. I don't want to say the Giants showed who they are, because they're a much better offense. And, I mean, they faced Kershaw and who was the other one they faced that day?
I can't remember
who the second pitcher was. It was Kershaw was one, and then
Kershaw shut him out over six, I believe. You know, Kershaw's back to where he was at the beginning of the year. He got hurt, but now his ERA is back under two. He's dealing right now. So what are you gonna do? They run into a buzzsaw. Plus, Johnny Cueto went out, and he's been pretty solid this year. He's had a couple of bad starts, but this was his, I believe, his first start with Joey Bart, and he admitted after the game, and he's admitted since that. He's had communication issues with Joey Bart. They haven't been on the same page, and it has thrown him out of his rhythm. But he said, I'm not saying it's Joey's fault. It's just, you know, that we had trouble, and that's just the way it is. And I'm sure he's going to be a star, blah, blah, blah. He said a lot of good things about Joey Bart. But his next start this past weekend in Arizona, he had Trump, who also speaks Spanish. He's bilingual, and he was amazing. So there might be something to that. I mean, I don't think he's going to say it if it's not true. So that could have had something to do it. That said, the Giants scored zero runs, so Johnny Cueto, good luck. What are you going to do?
They didn't help him out at all.
They got outscored 9-0. So, but you know what? You know, at the beginning of the season, I went back in our notes, and we thought that if the Giants could pull out 4 wins against those 10 against the Dodgers, because they had them compressed on the beginning of the year, and 7 in L.A., that would be adequate. And that's what they did. They got 4 out of 10. So again, it was frustrating. They could have split with those last two games, but they didn't. But they're done with the Dodgers. They're done with the Dodgers. No more Dodgers the rest of the year, which is really, really good to see. So
now they got to deal with the Padres.
Well, yeah, no, the Padres are up and coming, and now they've reloaded, right? Oof. It's going to be interesting. So the Giants went back on the road down to Arizona, and they did drop that first game 7-4. Unfortunately, coming off his complete game masterpiece, Tyler Anderson allowed 7 earned runs in 4 2/3 innings. Longo did go deep in that game. Again, though, another highlight you could point out is the bullpen, which really after those 3 consecutive blown saves in the 9th inning, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but I know they've been very, very solid lately. And even in that game, Tyler Anderson allowed all 7 runs in the game. Bullpen shut him down the last 4 1/3, right? Or sorry, 3 yeah. and a third, because they didn't bat in the bottom of the 9th.
And the offense came to life, too, towards the end of the game. Crawford homered late. They scored 3 runs in the 9th, you know, to tack on top of that Longo homer. You know, and they showed that they're still just going to keep hitting, because apparently – and they needed to, because they hadn't really scored a run in 4 days at that point.
Yeah, they needed to put something up in the stat column, because they had 1 run that whole game until the 9th, and then 0 the previous 2. So they needed something like that. However, the Giants had much better results in game 2 and 3 in the series. They won 5-2 behind another impressive outing by the bullpen after Trevor Cahill left with a hip injury in the 4th. The pen shut out the D-backs and held them to only one hit over the next 5 2/3. And then of course, Wilmer Flores went deep for the Giants.
See if Flores jumps on a fastball he can hit. He does. And he hits it high. He hits it deep, and he hits it out of here.
Let's take a look at the high fastball from Ginkle.
Ginkle.
I mean, that's middle in at 95.
A name.
And that orange glove keeps that top hand on it.
By the way, that pitch, according to the strike zone frame, right, the K zone, was a good 4 to 6 inches above the top, and it was 95. So I don't know how he got on top of that ball, but he did, and he sent it out. And another thing, he has that bright orange right glove, but he also has a very oddly colored orange belt. I don't know if you noticed that, Eric, but it's like, it's not a burnt orange or bright orange like the Giants colors. It's like a light yellowish orange. It looks very odd. So I don't know where you get that belt, but maybe it's good luck for him or something.
I'm going to have to, that's going to be the first thing I look at during Tuesday's game.
The kind of content the Giants fans really want to have, right? You know, what color belt do the Giants wear?
I mean, if it makes them better players, then yes.
So anyway, that home run happened in the ninth inning to tack on, but it was really good to see. And then they came back yesterday and won the series. 2-1 with a 4-1 game three victory behind Johnny Cueto. I mentioned that before. He went 6 2/3, allowed only one run on 3 hits with 6 Ks. He didn't get the win. He left with the game tied at 1. Tony Watson, who got a single out in the 7th, gets the win. But that's how baseball goes, right? Because they go to the top of the 8th with a score tied at 1, and then Alex Dickerson stepped up to the plate with the game tied.
Dickerson lines it into left field, a base hit. That's one run. Rickert's going to stop at third. The bases stay loaded, and the Giants take the lead.
The Giants take that 2-1 lead, and then Longo follows with a 2-RBI single. And, of course, this thing was squibbed up the middle, totally beat the shift. It was a pretty weak contact, but Giants will take it. Sometimes they, seeing eye singles happen, and the Giants
He's
end up winning 4-1.
He's been doing that, though. Kipe said it on the call yesterday. He's like, Longo does it again. He beats the shift, and he's been doing a lot of that. Like, I honestly, this is the best Longo has played in a Giants uniform, the best he's hit, at least, because this past week, the last 2 weeks, he doesn't seem to be slowing down at all.
He's looking really good. Alex Dickerson also had a home run in the first, and then Sam Coonrod got his first major league save with a perfect 9th, and he went through the heart of the order, so that was good to see. I mean, the Giants, you know, right now with I think Trevor Gott with being damaged goods for a while. They're experimenting. He's relied heavily on Tyler Rogers, but he's been by far the most appearances for the Giants this year out of the bullpen. So they can't always rely on him. Same with Tony Watson. He's been more of a setup guy. So they tried Coonrod, and it worked out. So we might see more of Coonrod the rest of the way.
They were also able to use whoever they wanted with the off day today, yesterday. So I think that's why he went Watson for the one inning, used Rogers as the setup, and gave Coonrod a shot. And I think that that's kind of a full circle moment for Coonrod. I'm sure he and Kapler had some difficult conversations at the beginning of the season, and I'm sure that there was some doubt in Coonrod's mind that he would get opportunities like this.
Yeah, and based off of his political,
Right. So you like to see that he is getting that opportunity because, you know, as we've stated before, you know, with the freedom of speech, you have to respect other people's freedom of speech as well. And it did create some difficult circumstances, but I think it's really neat that they were able to come back around, and now Kapler's giving him a chance, and Coonrod's looked filthy lately. He's throwing some balls up there like 101. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
No, he's looking really good. And see, this is the thing for people who get upset about, you know, Kapler and Yaz and others that are kneeling. It's like, you know, for us on that side who are okay with it, are also okay with Coonrod and what he said and him standing during the Black Lives Matter thing at the beginning of the year, where he was the only one to do that because he said, I only kneel in front of God. And that's fine. I mean, I have no problem with that. He's expressing his right to free speech, and that's okay. As long as you're throwing strikes and getting saves for us, I'm fine with it. Like, it doesn't matter to me, right? So I just wish everybody would kind of back off. And in fact, not to circle back too far, but during that boycott, it actually, Hank Schulman noted that it was a very nuanced situation because the Dodgers are the ones that kind of called for the boycott and asked the Giants. And of course, Gabe Kapler was fully on board, but he needed to talk to his team. And they had a discussion in the locker room and in the outfield. And it was not a unanimous decision. There were, several players who were not happy at all with the boycott. Now, they didn't name those players, of course. That's all internal. I would assume that Coonrod would be one of them. But, you know, there are probably several others as well. And so it was not a unanimous thing. They did it as a team, but it was not unanimous. So you're right. I mean, this is one of those situations where maybe Coonrod, because of his injury earlier and because of his political stance, maybe he's thinking, God, am I going to get a chance? But Gabe Kapler, to his credit, again, is being, you know, for lack of a better term, politically blind about it, which he should be as a manager. He should only care about his players and their performance and what they can do to help this team. And so to his credit, he put him out there in a tough, safe situation, and he came through with flying colors. So that's great for both sides.
Yeah, I that's, you know, it's funny because, you know, we're not going to get into Kapler too much right now, but that's part of why, like, I really respect Kapler as a leader of men, a leader of a team. People seem to listen to him. People seem to gravitate to him and talk to him about things. You know, his baseball acumen is aside at that point. And that's why I really appreciate that he's been the Giants manager during this time, because this is the weirdest, most wacky, effed up season we're ever going to deal with. And I can't imagine how it would be with the old guard right now. I kind of like that they have the new guard in there to handle these new things. And so we never have to worry or think about what would Bochy have done, or, you know, Bochy's not listening to his players, or, you know, that's a possibility back then. You know, Sabian and Bochy might not have listened to their players as openly as Kapler and Zaidi are willing to. And again, yeah, that's not to knock on those guys. They're both fine men and good individuals, but you know, it's tough to tell how the Giants would have handled this. So, you know, Kapler, to his credit, has stepped up. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see if the other stuff with the baseball acumen comes, because I do enjoy him as a leader of this ball club. And I think the players do key in on it. And that's why I think they're performing well, too. I mean, they're never out of a game. And I don't feel like we've said that about a Giants team in 6 years. You know, maybe 2016 a little bit, but this team, you look at the way they scored runs late. You know, you mentioned the bullpen and how good they've been lately. They didn't let up a hit yesterday, the bullpen. Cueto left after 6 2/3, and then Watson, Rogers, and Coonrod didn't allow a single hit. It's like they're rounding into shape finally, and I think it's reflective of everything that's going on. They were just a completely different team a month ago than they are now, and they're a lot more fun to watch, I'll say that.
They are a lot more fun to watch, so. All right, let's talk about who's hot and who's not. I've just selected three players that have been hot, and look at this. It's kind of like it's the old guys' club. It's the old men's club here. But we got Longo. This is over the last six games, by the way, since we last recorded. His slash line is 435, 652, and 1132. So his OPS there, 1132, with a home run and five RBI. And he's up to 299 on the year. Again, slow start. He's picking it up. Brandon Belt, we talked about him. 425, 905, 1425. His OPS is through the freaking roof.
Barry
because
Bonds.
Of that streak of, 11 straight plate appearances, right? With a couple of bombs and six RBI. And, by the way, these numbers include an 0-for-4 yesterday. So, wow. I mean, the numbers were even higher before yesterday. And he's now batting .313 on the year. So he's right up there just behind Donovan Solano for the team lead in batting average. And then you have Brandon Crawford, who definitely has been picking it up lately. He hit .400 for the week with a bomb and two RBI. So it's good to see some of the old crew making those contributions, especially because you have some of the new guys that started really hot, not doing so hot right now. So let's talk about them. Donnie Barrels, he had that amazing walk-off. That was the right hit at the right time. We needed it. They needed it. However, for the week, only hitting .158. Joey Bart, after he came up and was 4 for his first 12, he was smoking the ball every time. He's 1 for his last 19. Now hitting
Go ahead. Do you know how many strikeouts in those 19?
Yes.
It's got to be a lot.
So he's hitting .161 for the year, and he has 15 strikeouts and 31 total at-bats. So his strikeout average is almost .500. Think about that.
I had to ask, because I noticed watching him yesterday, he is – the pitchers, they're not throwing him fastballs anymore.
Yeah.
Everything is a breaking pitch in the dirt that he's swinging over right now. He's got to adjust now. I think the league's already adjusting to him.
Yeah, well, actually, he said there's that pitch and then busting him inside as well. And so he said, yeah, that's what they've done in the minors. I just need to adapt. It's like, okay, well, if you know what they're doing, let's go, buddy. Now, you know, that said, I see a lot of people – It's different fans. I get it. So, you know, everyone's calling for Joey Bart to get called up. He gets called up. He has the first four games are amazing. And now he's, you know, tanking because the league knows who he is now. And the scouting report is out. And these teams have times to kind of put that plan in place. And he's struggling. Now people are like, oh, they got to send him back down, get a veteran up here. And it's like, well, is Heinemann any better? I mean, let's be honest. Come on. He was hitting under .200 anyway. I went back to 2009 today, and I looked at Buster Posey, who, of course, that's when he made his debut. Now, he only had 17 at-bats at the end of that year, and Joey's already had 31. However, Buster Posey was 2-for-17 in those at-bats, a .118 average. So, you know, look, Buster Posey was 2-for-17. Now he's hitting .161, Joey Bart, and he's 1 for his last 19. give him a break. Let's see how he does. No one expected him to come up and hit 300 with 10 bombs. That's not what he's designed to do this year. What this is supposed to do is get him that experience in the major leagues. They were just going to waste him down in Sacramento. He wasn't going to get any reps other than practice swings. They don't lose a year of eligibility either. So why not? I don't see anything that's bad. This guy has a ton of confidence. I don't think, even if he hits 090 for the year, I don't think it's going to wreck his confidence at all because there's not that many games left. So I think it's okay to do this. Now, that said, Buster Posey came in 2010 and freaking raked right at the beginning of the year. In fact, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I looked and it's like his first five games, he had at least 2 to 3 hits every game. He was still hitting .435 10 games into the season in 2010. So he came into 2010 just roaring. So I can't compare Buster Posey's first 31 at-bats to Joey Bart's. But of course, those were over two seasons. Buster Posey came into spring training as the de facto catcher. So that probably had a lot to do with how he started 2010. But
I mean, Bart's going to learn. It's strike zone recognition. That's what's killing him. He's not recognizing the pitches that are going to drop out of the zone. And if I were an opposing team, I'd bust his ass inside too. Every time. He's got a long reach. So really long. He has a hard time getting to that inside pitch. And it's just a matter of figuring it out, knowing to start taking. If he is still doing this next year, like you say, then it's a problem. But for now, who the hell cares? It's a lost season in general. Let's just have fun with it, and hopefully he'll hit a few dingers. Yeah, if he doesn't,
It's still okay. And then Yaz is also struggling. So again, flipping the old guys for the new guys has actually been good timing. Because you want to see that. You want to see that ebb and flow of a chunk of the team doing well while a chunk of the team's doing bad, enough to get, 500 or above 500. If everyone's getting hot at once, that's great for a winning streak. But then if everybody gets cold at once, that's really bad for a losing streak. So Yaz is 3 for his last 22 over the last six games. That's .136. So he's down to .280, I believe, on the year right now. So he's still doing fine, but he's kind of dropping away and out of that MVP conversation that we were talking about last week. I know it's only been a week, but this is the short season, so it's kind of like 3 weeks. It's almost a month of stats. So that's the way you have to think about it. Overall, starter ERA is still not doing that well. It's 10th in the NL at 4.92. Now, overall, this is back in the hot column. The Giants are 6th in the NL in home runs and 3rd in runs scored behind the Padres and Dodgers. And their bullpen ERA is getting better and better and better. Now they are all the way up to 7th in the NL. So they're basically right in the middle of the pack at 4.86, which is actually better, slightly better than their starter ERA. So that's a huge improvement because they were way over 5.5, almost 6, not that long ago. And so they've really been bringing it down. It's really good to see.
Well, part of, again, with this season being what it is, we're seeing this with football because I've been listening to a lot of football podcasts talking about, this season coming up and the teams that are going to do well or the ones that are already established and the ones that are put together. And the Giants weren't. We had a new manager coming in, completely new bullpen almost coming in, 2-3 new starters coming in. And so they needed some time to figure their shit out is really what it is. I mean, look at these last 2 weeks. Yeah, they had some horrible losses to the Dodgers this past week. They still went 3-3. It's still a positive week because 500's positive right now. Yeah. So it's really a good sign for the rest of the season. I mean, they've got two more homestands left against Arizona, Seattle, Colorado, and San Diego. And if they can do things on the homestands, they should, they should be in the contention for that seventh or eighth playoff spot. And it's more than we could have asked for a month ago.
Well, I mean, think about it. We are literally going into September tomorrow, Eric. So, I mean, even if this was a full season, right, you're talking about them being a half game out of the playoffs with less than a month to go. So, I mean, this is the excitement that Major League Baseball wanted to generate this year with the short season and the extra playoff spots. Freaking 80% of the teams are, quote, in it right now. So it does drive a lot of the trades that we've seen today, but a lot of the excitement for the fans. So at least it's something to look forward to. No matter how crappy of a season we can call it, it's at least something.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm having fun watching this team. Seriously, this is the most fun Giants team in years. So I know we're in the middle of a pandemic and all that, but at least they've provided a slight distraction.
That's right. All right, let's talk about transactions. And speaking of transactions, we are now almost a full hour past the deadline. And Hank Schulman and others are calling it Bupkis for the Giants. In fact, Shulman just tweeted a minute ago, the Giants went in with a listening mindset, not a selling mindset. And yeah, so no trades for the Giants, it looks like. And of course, they were talking about maybe a Johnny Cueto going somewhere. There are even rumors on MLB Network this morning about Yaz going, which I was like, the first I've ever heard of that. I think that was a rumor that just died really quickly. Well, I mean, you know, the point that they were bringing up is like, yeah, the guy's having a great year, but he's 30 years old. He's certainly not a player that you build around, quote unquote, in, since you are a rebuilding team. And it's true, the Giants, even though this year, we'll see what happens with them hanging around 500, they still don't seem to be built over the next couple of years of being a 90-win team. And Yaz is, you know, going to get older much more quickly. So I'm glad they didn't trade him. Believe me, I want them to keep Yaz. He's barely been here, not even a full season. He hasn't even played 162 games with the Giants, for God's sakes. And he's already shown what he can do. So I'm like, dude, you can't sell him now. But again, if they did go in with listening mode and someone threw the piggy bank at the Giants, then, you know, maybe they would have pulled the trigger. But I think the reality is that 7-game winning streak got them back into the playoff contention. And if they had, if they were 5-6 games out of the playoff race right now, I think you would have seen maybe a Cueto go, maybe someone else go. But I think they're sitting right there going, what the hell, man? It's a 60-game season. Let the chips fall where they may. If we make it in the playoffs, anything can happen, right? So.
And it's weird how it's almost a repeat of last year when they had that hot month. It's so weird. Because like you said, a week is a month basically now. And the fact that they were able to jump back in it with that 7-game winning streak, because they were not – I do appreciate that they weren't going to looking to add pieces to make them a contender. Like, they know who they are. Zaidi knows who he is. They're not the Padres. They're not going to go out and get, you know, a couple guys and suddenly be in great contention. Padres are already there. Giants are not there yet. So at least they know who they are, and that's why they had to stand pat. If Cueto had gotten traded, it had to have been for a great package. And there's no minor leagues this year, so you don't even know how any of these guys are performing. And this is why I said it a couple weeks ago. I thought this would be a quieter deadline, and it really has been. That Indians Padres trade was a big one that you mentioned. Kevin Pillar got traded. That wasn't big. Jackie Bradley Jr. stayed in Boston though. There was rumors he was going to go and that the Giants were one of the teams kicking tires there. But, usually we're screaming, you know, why didn't they do this and why didn't they do that? And the chips fall where they may. That's a good mentality for 2020 because things are going to happen regardless and you can't really control it. So at least let them play it out. I mean, they got Doobie last year at the trade deadline. I think he was the biggest addition, really. And it was funny, I missed it in the Who's Hot because he was not hot. But during the week, he got sacked. He started the first game against the Dodgers, and then Gabe Kapler sat him for the entire doubleheader, and then sat him again on Friday. Mm-hmm. And I think that Dubon got a fire lit under him because he was a lot more patient at the plate Saturday and Sunday, and he seems to be getting center field down. And they went 3-0 with him in center, so maybe he is the center fielder of the future, and Yaz can stay on the corner. Because when Yaz plays center, it almost feels like it takes away from his offense a little bit, and I like seeing him stay over in right field.
That's a really good point. It's something that you picked up that I hadn't all week that, Doobie was sat, but they were 3-0 with him. So, you know, and overall, the Giants are now, they've won 8 out of the last 11. So that's 1/6 of the season, a little more than 1/6 of the season, and they won 8 of those games. So if they pull out one or two more of those weeks where they can win, you know, 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, that's all they need. That's literally all they need. I mean, we're talking about 24 games left in the season, Eric. That's it. Now, there are definitely some other teams that got more than 30 because they behind, man. They behind because of all Oakland. The COVID stuff. Yeah, in fact, that's a great point. We had been talking about how really the American League, but certainly the Western Division teams had been avoiding COVID problems, but it finally hit the Oakland A's. They had one personnel test positive this week, so nothing more than that. So they had their game against Houston postponed and now the first two games against Seattle postponed. So they're going to have to make up those three games somehow later in the season. So far nothing in the NL.
It's just crazy that it finally happened. You know, none of the NL West teams, you know, it's really weird that this whole side of the country, but Oakland was in Texas for a little bit and Texas has not been as safe as other states.
Yeah. Maybe someone went out.
Exactly.
All right, let's talk about transactions for the week. Back on August 25th, they signed free agent right-handed pitcher, and I don't know how to pronounce his name, Herman Malave. to a minor league contract. These are players that are not going to make any immediate impact, of course. We didn't talk about this earlier. It was a little bit of sad news. Definitely not up there with Hunter Pence. But on the 26th, the Giants DFA'd Derek Rodriguez. And he was one, man, Eric. Look at what he did in 2018, right? 2.91 ERA, rookie phenom, son of Pudge Rodriguez. I mean, we all thought he was not the next Tim Lincecum, but we all thought he was the next big thing. He was going to be the next, guy for the Giants that was going to step in for the next 5 or 6 years and be a frontline starter. And I don't know enough about it, Eric. I'm not a mechanics guy. I know he hasn't been injured too much, but I don't know what happened to him. You know, 2019, he really struggled, was sent down. And then, of course, 2020, he started the season down. He's been called up a couple of times and just been shelled. I can't put a finger on it. I looked at his velocity. His velocity didn't look down. I don't know if it's the league that knows him too well or caught up to him, or he just has lost his accuracy. Do you have any ideas on what happened to this guy?
That was my thought, is he lost his accuracy because he lost his head. He bought into his own hype, and I don't say this negatively because I bought into my own hype before, you know.
Yeah.
He bought into his own hype, thought to himself, yeah, I'm going to be the next Giants superstar, you know, and then things fell apart. So when things went wrong, he was never able to grasp that confidence he had in 2018, and so it makes a missed location on pitches. It sounds weird, but the whole dominoes go that way, and yeah. So he hasn't lost velocity, but that pitch that was down at the bottom of the zone started drifting up in the zone, and it was just because he's not probably wasn't paying attention to his mechanics or repeating what he needed to repeat every time. I hope he catches on somewhere and has a shot, but he might be one of these guys that just flashes on the scene for a year. You know, a fan base falls in love with them and then they disappear after that. And, you know, that's kind of okay. I liked him. He was a good kid. He seemed really eager to want to learn and carve his own path. So
yeah,
it's a shame that it didn't work out, but I think this is also another, new regime, getting rid of people from the old regime.
I think so too. And, you know, it just, he reminded me of like kind of one of those burnouts that we had earlier, like a Noah Lowry kind of pitcher, exactly. Where he really looked good in the beginning. We're like, oh, this is it. He's the next guy. And it just, nothing ever happened, you know? Even Sean Estes to a certain extent, although he stuck around with the ball club a lot longer, he just never, you know, really got it together. I was off the top of my head. I thought it was a 2.91 ERA in 2018. It was a 2.81 ERA in 2018. I mean, think about that today, a 2.81. My God, that's like Cy Young worthy practically.
It really is.
And that was 21 games, 19 starts, 118 innings pitched. He only gave up 98 hits. His whip was 1.13. I mean, he was great, man. His K per nine wasn't too bad. It was just under 7. His walks per nine were just under 3. Home runs per nine under 1. He was great. And then 2019, he had almost as many innings pitched. He had 99, but he actually completely doubled his ERA. It went from 2.81 to 5.64. 5.64. Suddenly gave up 108 hits. Whip was 1.455. It just went, you know, bad. And then of course this year he only had 4 innings, gave up 6 earned runs and 2 bombs for an ERA of 13.5. so he finishes his 2+ years with the Giants with a 4.27 ERA.
Thought that 2 years ago.
No, we wish him well. It sucks, you know. I thought again he was going to be the next big thing, and unfortunately he's not. And on that note, he was actually did not clear waivers. He was claimed by the Detroit Tigers today. So he is now a Tiger. So awesome. That's interesting. Okay. So also, on the 26th, they traded catcher Rob Brantley, who started the year on the roster, to the Yankees for cash. They selected the contract of Joey Rickert from the alternate training site. So he's up with the team right now, actually scored a run last night. They recalled a center fielder, Luis Alexander Basabe, from the training site on the 27th. They also sent Joe McCarthy outright to the Sacramento River Cats. I'm a little confused between the distinction between sending him outright to Sacramento River Cats versus the alternate training site.
The outright to Sacramento clears
it's like
them
you're not
off
on the yeah, right. They're not on the roster. Yeah, the 40 man or the 60 man roster, I guess, right? So.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that's it. They optioned outfielder Luis Alexander Basabe back to the alternate training site. They signed free agent right-handed pitcher Junior Flores to a minor league contract. And then, like I said, the Tigers claimed Rodriguez off of waivers today. So that completes the transactions for the week. And yeah, no trades, no nothing. It's crazy.
Yeah, nothing. I was looking through my Twitter earlier, and I saw the Hank tweet when you saw it too. And yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm okay with that. I mean,
I'm okay with it.
You don't know what you have. You really don't. Yeah. We know the Giants have a good offense. We know they could use some pitching help, but everybody could use some pitching help.
Yeah. No, it's look, the Giants don't have the biggest farm system right now. They've been building it and building it and building it, and that's kind of what Farhan is here to do, right? So, and he's been pulling some really good behind the scenes trades, which may develop into really, really good major leaguers down the road. So, you know, he doesn't want to give anything up for a major leaguer today. That's not what he's here for. You know, he knows that they're in rebuilding mode. The ownership knows it. So he's trying to stack the minor leagues right now. And unfortunately, I'm sure he was listening for deals for Cueto or Yaz or Brandon Belt or whomever to acquire more minor leaguers. But I'm sure the offers just weren't sufficient. So they didn't pull the trigger.
Exactly. They were not shopping for a big name bat or a big name pitcher. No, they were shopping for depth if they were shopping at all.
The Padres. To be honest, I understand the Padres doing what they're doing because they've been on the, quote, precipice, even though they haven't been, for so long, and they have a really loaded minor league system. And so they said, you know what? We're in second place. We got a shot at this. Why don't we go in all right now, get a number one starter, a couple relievers, you know, an outfielder, and see what we can do. So they've definitely got a lot stronger. We'll see how they go. And like you said, the Giants have a lot of games left against the Padres. So.
They have a home and home left. I mean, shit. So six of the final 24 games are against these, you know, revamped Padres. Yeah. And I'm really actually looking forward to those games because I think they're going to be fun. I kind of like that the Padres have a little spunk to them now. Yeah, they have four in San Diego, and then they close the season with three at home against the Padres.
Yeah.
Looking ahead at the week that's coming up now, they've got two in Colorado, and they get to see old friend Kevin Pillar, who just got traded there. And then they go to Arizona. No, they come home for a four-game series against Arizona that wraps around the weekend, Friday to Monday, before two more against Seattle next week. But that's next week.
It's crazy, man. I mean, this
Colorado
series
should be fun, though.
Yeah. Well, they've already had they lost three out of four in Colorado earlier this year. So, and of course, they have six of their 10 in Colorado that are versus the Rockies, which kind of stinks, but that's just the way it is. They do have four against the Rockies later in September at home, and that's the last four they play. So, yeah, I mean, look, this season's wrapping up. We got 24 games left, two homestands. That's it. They got the two against the Rockies on the road. Then they got four against the Diamondbacks and two against the Mariners at home. That's one homestand. Then they go back on the road for nine games. And then they come back home for their final seven game homestand. And that's it. That's all she wrote. So, man, this thing is just whizzing by.
I don't think I'm going up there for a game. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be making it during September.
No, I understand. I understand, especially the playoffs if they're in contention. So I certainly am probably going to make a push to see if I can cover the game against the Mariners next Tuesday. But that's a week plus from now. And then hopefully at least one game during their final homestand, especially if they're in the playoff hunt. So maybe a couple more games this year. But that would be good. All right, well, I think that's going to do it for episode 205. I know Eric's been through a lot lately with his move and the fire and everything else, but I don't know if you have anything that you've been working on. Probably not. You've been a little consumed with everything, I'm sure, in real life, right?
You
have so much time to kill.
You talk about life, you know, if sports are there, you know, and sometimes you can't watch the games because of this or that. And it's like, I can't wait to just sit and watch games this week. Maybe something will percolate, but I got nothing at this moment. I'm just happy to have a home.
Yes, that is. There are more important things in baseball, as we said earlier. And having a home is one of them.
Yep.
All right. Well, you can follow us collectively at TortureCast, individually at ChadK21 for myself, at Two Out Hits for Eric. Let's see, which way should I point? That way? I don't know. You can also check out our website, torturecast.com, where we post our podcast and any articles that we may have coming up. Also, like us on Facebook. We also have a YouTube channel, which we are now recording video streams of each and every podcast and posting them there, and occasionally doing a Facebook Live. But we've had some technical glitches, and doing it at noon, a lot of people are working and doing other things, so we may or may not do that going on forward into the day. I keep teasing a partnership. I think I'm going to put that at the front of this podcast so you can see it in a separately recorded thing. But other than that, thanks for listening to episode 204, and we'll see you next week for episode 205. Until then, see you then. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.